My name is Mike McLean. This is an interview for the Athabasca Memory Project, and the date is May 25th, 2022. And I am at the house of Rosie Gay, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Rosie. Actually, you've described that allergies get you a little worse nowadays than maybe you used to experience.
Yes, and it's really bad today for some reason, but it's hard. It's harder for me to talk.
Yeah.
And you had asked me about some interest I had during my lifetime. I had a lot of interests, but some more so than others. And one is the pottery club, for sure, which I got involved in about 1973. And I'm still involved in it. Now I'm not so much hands-on, but I'm there if they need to know anything.
Well, can I interject and say that the last time we met up was at the Seniors Center at the Lions Boardroom, and we got there early, specifically for you to look at through all of our table linens, tablecloths.
Right.
So as far as you being involved, I know that over some years now, it's been gradually shifted to other members in the club. But yeah, it's still interesting to me anyway, that you're still involved in, like, that would be an example. You're going to arrange these tablecloths. You're going to be involved with, I guess it'll be a pottery sale that we missed, was it 2 years now because of the pandemic?
Yeah, but it's going to be this on the 4th of June. And it used to be a yearly thing. That was our one fundraiser at the time.
Hmm.
And
can I ask you, because for the reasons you got involved in pottery over the years, you, your ability to create art with pottery, with the clay, did you look forward to these shows once a year? Was that like where you really wanted to bring out the things that you were really proud of or happy how they worked out?
Well, yes, that came quite a bit later after I was first involved, because we had no place to work. And we had to move so many times before we finally got a place in the basement of the old brick school. And it took us a while before we could produce enough stuff to have a sale. So it took quite a few years before we were at the point where we had something that was worthwhile selling.
That's hard to appreciate, because you go to the annual sales now and there's just an abundance of, there's a lot of members, there's so many different pieces. And it's also hard to imagine that home of the Pottery Club isn't in the basement of the old brick school. Like, it just feels like it's been there. So what was it like in the earlier years? Like, describe what you would do.
No, we called it a dungeon. we had a place next to a furnace in the, it was still a part of the brick school, but it's there was only one tiny window, and it was not a good place to work. And eventually we got to go upstairs in the brick school.
Okay.
And we were there for quite a few years until they fixed the basement of the brick school for us, which gave us a place with water, and there was a bathroom that was accessible. And this is something that no one could appreciate unless you don't have that at all, especially if you're working with mud, with clay. And everybody needs to wash their hands, and everybody drinks coffee. And so that's something, it took a lot of persistence to go through all of that.
How would you get the raw material? There was a whole process about that too, just getting the clay, and how did that all work?
And actually, that clay is part of Athabasca. It's up on the hill, just out towards where the hospital is in that area. And I can't remember the people that we got it from. And they were so kind to us. And right now I can't think of her name. But yeah, so they used to let us go and dig it and haul it in through the window. And and there's a big process to make that clay. You have to soak it and stir it and strain it and then harden it again.
So is this something that will take a period of days or weeks?
Oh, yes. It takes weeks. Okay. You have to, it's just like making bread in a batter that you have to keep waiting for it to ferment and all that. But so it's not an easy process. We're very, very few. I think we're one of the few people or clubs that actually make their own clay and have Athabasca clay. It's right from home. And it's a nice color and it's good. So over the years we've learned how to process it better and better, and our club grew very big little by little. We thought it could be managed quite well, but eventually we had to go at night and have clubs working at night. And more days than just the one, because it just was popular. And it originally started for me, it was something I wanted to do for me after raising my family and working on the farm. And I thought this was going to be a breeze. And it wasn't. It was very enjoyable, but it wasn't easy. And I think I was going to say, I don't know how many years I was president simply because no one else would tackle that job, because it took a lot of work.
Who were you working with in the earlier years of the Pottery Club? Like who else was involved with you there?
Originally, Irene Schinkinger and Eleanor Osmond. And of course, Dr. Brown, she was the one that found the clay. But those two ladies, they helped out a lot. They had a lot of knowledge that I didn't have. They were just the greatest couple to work with. Mm.
Dr. Brown seems to have been involved in just about everything, you know?
We had quite a few, well, there were banquets or suppers or whatever, and with her in it. And she always said, no, that Pottery Club was not hers, but it really originally was Dr. Brown's. She was the one that found the clay. She was the one that started the whole thing. And I think they used to work in the at the hall that they had in the basement, the community center, they called it. Pottery Club is still going strong, and everybody seems to enjoy it. And they've grown almost too big for what they can manage, but they seem to enjoy it, so I'm not the one to say slow down.
You know, person gets interested in the type of clay projects and like where were your interests? Because if I understand it, you also arranged over the years to have workshops.
Oh, yes. We bring in people from that already had the knowledge and that knew different ways of building things with pottery, with clay.
Yeah.
So every year we'd have one person coming, which means you have to arrange for all that. And yeah, we did that a lot. We even brought, one year there was a fellow came out from Switzerland. He wanted to come, and he was the original one that had started doing clay works in Athabasca, and they had a store here and a clay project.
How did you track him down?
Well, I think he talked to Marion Mole somehow through the
archives, I guess?
Through archives.
Yeah.
And he wanted to come back and see the place.
Yeah. Oh.
So he did, and we had a whole day with him at the seniors, and a banquet at night, or we were together anyway in the evening. Yeah, so that was something that was really interesting.
So have you been to the archives to see what they've got of the pottery holdings?
I haven't been.
Oh, wow.
I just haven't.
Make a trip of it when you're in on a Tuesday or Thursday. I think I mentioned there was something sent by mail from a woman who wanted pieces that she's had for a long time, but she wanted them to end up at the archives.
Yeah.
A set of some sort, you know.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing, the original, because I have the original ones here too.
You were involved with the club when there was, well, right around Centennial, there was like a lot of work to get a whole bunch of these commemorative plates and all.
Right, we have them.
Yeah.
We have them done.
Yeah.
For the town, I think the town asked for some, and we gave them. I'm not sure, but it was like, I don't know if it was 2 dozen of each size, and they wanted that to be able to give to someone that came in to speak, or for the town anyway.
Yeah, because like you can't give something better to represent a unique little part of our town, literally made of the stuff of our area, right?
Yeah, and Linda Bowman is a professional potter.
Hmm.
She used to make plates for Banff and Jasper and for so many different people that would want, in restaurants, who would want, you know, dozens of them. And so she took on the project of doing them. It's just amazing.
So who did the illustration of the old brick school that would have ended up as an image on the plate?
We had that stamped.
Yeah.
A stamp made by... She's in that building where she does all the...
Morningstar Inc.
Morningstar
Inc. Klatchik.
Barb Klatchik.
Oh, yeah.
And she made us the stamp
oh,
for it.
Okay.
And that's what we used. And she made several things like that for us. Yeah, so we used that for several things too in pottery, but yeah, that for sure.
And then there was a smaller version, like I think it might have been a fridge magnet or something.
It could have been.
Maybe.
There were for 2 different occasions
yeah.
that we had stamps. One was for 100 years.
Mm.
Athabasca 100 years.
You mentioned Linda Bowman's work and Bowman?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was the person you connected me to make the vase for my mom's ashes.
Yeah.
And remind me of who worked with Linda to paint it, sort of the decorative glaze.
That young lady is not any longer with us. She's not in Athabasca anymore. She moved. And I can't remember her name offhand. I'd have to...
Ukrainian. Did she move here from Ukraine? Or am I getting her mixed up with somebody? I don't remember.
I couldn't remember that.
But you helped arrange that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah. She was very good. She did very artistic.
Mm-hmm.
Linda has done urns for quite a few people. And she does them in our own clay. And, of course, we don't ask for anything that's special but as what you had, you know. Mm. But that's what Hal was buried in. Was one of her, and as a matter of fact, there's about 3 or 4 people that I know that have used them. I have mine up in the cupboard.
You know, you mentioned Hal, and I kind of never thought about it in terms of our interview, but I wonder, I know he spent his lifetime in forestry, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be one heck of a thing to hear his stories. But I can't interview him now, obviously.
But he wrote his history.
Okay.
I've got his whole history. I just sort of ignored it for a while, or I didn't think too much about it.
Yeah.
Until one night I started to read it. He was an amazing man.
Mm-hmm.
What he did in his lifetime and how he, you know, survived because he didn't have a family home like we do now.
Mm.
You know, his mother died early, and
okay.
And yeah, so he was an amazing. He could do so many things. That's why I think he was such a kind man.
Okay.
And so, you know, so good to everybody.
Yeah, kind and gentle, yeah. And just such a civil demeanor.
Yeah.
And let's not forget he liked to dance. That was something
you learned, music and right? Dancing, yeah.
In fact, one of the things, we could jump to it, but I know you through the Lions Club, and there was always the things that you did as the member, and one of them was the organizing of annual Seniors Harvest Fest.
Yep.
And that always comes with the memory that there'd be a live band and you and Hal would dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Harvest Fest was always something special.
Was that your idea?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I...
Your idea.
Yeah, that was what I had. I can't remember how it ever started, but...
Well, that's funny. It's something that for a while, like, we had to take a break again because of the COVID pandemic, but that was a big event we would organize every year. And it's funny that you can say that. How did it even start? What was the reason? But it went on for years.
It started when the old community center was still going.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's when it started. And Joe Bortnick, I think, I remember he was doing it, and one time he said, I can't do this. He said, can you do it? And I said, well, I can help. And as it turned out, I just ended up taking it.
So you were the one who took it from the old community center to the senior center.
Yeah.
And was it similar at that time with a band in the old community center too? Eh?
Oh, yes. Always had, he'd have a big band of some sort come from somewhere or whatever.
So as far as where it got to be Gary Jewell,
yeah,
and the Amigos, is that who he plays?
Yeah.
That was your doing to connect with those people?
Yes.
So let's name the band, because that'll be in the interview, but there's Gary Jewell, Ben...
Burton.
Wes Mapp.
Yeah.
Right?
Ken Pickett used to help.
Oh, Ken was...
he wasn't with that. He used to play.
Okay, and then there's the... Latimer would sing. Oh,
yeah. Latimer and Pat Silke.
Oh, yes, Pat Silke, vocals.
Yeah.
What the heck, her name, Latimer. Why can't I think of her first name, honestly? But that's mostly the regulars of the band, right? Yeah. So you would have been the one to get them involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me describe, because you would recruit. You would say, here's where we need to have some things ready, and you would tell people what their job was.
Yes.
But you'd bring in containers full, and you had all this stuff in storage. So describe what you had for each and every Harvest Fest, how it had to be.
Harvest Fest?
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of advertising for the
Harvest Advertising, Fest. Yeah.
A lot of advertising, and the other thing was we solicited, put out your posters, but then we went out and solicited some prizes, something to give away.
Yeah.
And we also had, I remember organizing a lunch group that would make the sandwiches, and Margie Reno-Tops and I would grocery shop, and we'd each have a list, and she would be done way ahead of me, and I was still pinching the tomatoes or whatever, the fruit, to see if it was ripe enough or not ripe. And Marge'd say, what are you doing anyway? Yeah.
So Marge comes in there and she shops up a storm. And I've been at those preparation sessions, but it goes so well organized. Like, everyone gets in and we make the sandwiches and we're all ready to go. So we have the advertising, You went out and got,
The soliciting.
yeah, and it's always really nice stuff,
Yeah.
like the
That's
door
right.
prizes,
Yeah.
and we got the refreshments all set up. You have a band, and no, it's the extra touches though. You always have to have a certain look in the room,
Decoration,
right?
yeah. It was always decorated in some way that was according to the whether it was harvest, so it, yeah, so we always did that really well.
It's almost in the Lions Club legends of the day that you and Maxine Williams had your standoff on the tape measures and the spacing of tables.
Oh,
Like that's gone down in history.
that sure is. She wanted them all certain distance apart. I couldn't handle that anymore.
Well, when you're someone like me, I guess you think you know things, but until you're in the room and you're listening to somebody who's planned the event for years, and you realize one of them is geometry, you got to figure out how to have tables arranged so that everyone can. And it's not just that, it's you always had a table set up for people who need wheelchair
That's
access,
right.
remember?
Yeah.
And you had the table reserved for the band, so it was just really something to witness how you had planned it. And
There are things that just had to go, had to work out to accommodate everybody. And the lunch table had to look nice. And yeah, it was, that was really something very enjoyable,
It was a good time
oh,
and
yeah.
getting in there and setting up the room, because I appreciated you had an idea of what you wanted it to be,
Yeah.
and you had it organized. So if someone came to help, they knew what they had to do, and then when it was done, it was exactly the way you wanted. And it was a nice visit, because like there was certain placemats you needed on each one. You had center pieces of
Yes.
and
Something.
really good stuff.
And eventually, when I got to know the where Hal stayed, Extendicare, and I invited them. And I remember the matron one time, because I invited her one year and nothing happened. She said, "Oh, we don't have that much help." And anyway, she blew me off, and I was really unhappy about that. So I said to her that what another year when I came to invite her. And she said again the same thing. She couldn't spare help to do that. I said, "Well, you know, if I could go to all that work of making a beautiful event for people like the staff or the people that you have here that need some entertainment, well, I think you could just take 2 minutes more and figure out a way that you can send a bus with." A van with a truckload or a load of them, especially those that would enjoy it, eh? So you remember we turned out, we started to bring, they started to send a busload or
Yeah, the
a
bus
van.
would show up, and there'd be, we try to help out getting
Yeah.
them from the vehicle into the building,
Right. Wheelchairs.
and that was from around the county too, wasn't
Yeah,
it?
that was a county one. So the people that came, they didn't just come from Athabasca. They were from around surrounding areas. They weren't just.
Well, do we recall now how many people would usually turn up from one year to the next? Because it was a full space. It seemed like we wouldn't want a whole bunch more people showing up, that's for
No,
sure.
there was a limit to how many we could have.
Like, was it was more than 80.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was
Was it
more
over
than
100 and some?
it was a good 100 anyway
Yeah, I'd
that we
say
had.
so.
Yeah. So
And it was about what, 3 hours?
yeah,
Three-ish? Three, four?
we'd start shortly after lunch. And in between all that we'd have the lunch out. And I think it would be at least 4 o'clock before the band was always so good about it. They were just and I would try to have some little gift for them. I remember the last year we had honey.
It was, that was Rod's honey, Rod Canal.
Rod donated all the honey to everybody. And so the band, he's got one.
He has moved into town.
That's what I heard.
In fact, I think he wants us to come over and have a visit at his property in June. Have the lions and have a meal.
I'd love to go.
Yeah.
I think the world of Rod and his family. I think that they're just...
That's how I met you, was the Lions Club. And you also were...
I can't remember that, but...
Yeah. You're the reason I associate that there is a Centennial Park, the Lions Centennial Park. So how did that happen?
Well, that was... Chernichan was on
Lionel Chernichan.
He was on council then. And one day he said, he called me over and said, you know, Rosie, we have some property up over the river there. He said, do you think you could ever talk the lions into doing something with it?
And so this is just north of us on the bluff over on the north side of the river.
Yeah, across the river.
Yeah, right across from town.
And I said, well, I could try. I don't know, but I'd have to have a look and see what I'll ask the lions and see what we can do. When I got there to look at it, it was not a pleasant sight. There was dead trees and junk all over, and I imagine the teenagers had been using it for drinking parties, and it just was not easy. So, not an easy thing.
So help me out, because right now there's a bridge that we know it'll move. So the new bridge will come in a couple years' time, whatever. So the bridge comes across the river, and then you take the immediate left. So there's a little road that goes up. Now, was that always there?
That road was always there because there was a house.
There was always a house up at the top of the hill.
Yeah.
So when you went up to get a look at things... Is there a person or is there a family living in that house at the time? Or
yes, well, I think so. Or else, I can't remember now.
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny spot because there's a private property, but then right adjoining, right there, is the town land, right?
Town land, yeah.
Okay.
And it was something that took a lot of, well, I'm not saying courage, or goal for me to think that I could do something with it.
Well, you must have had guys come in and operate equipment, so you must have recruited
At first, people. It was all handwork. It was just straight handwork. And I think we had someone, maybe it might have even been Mark at that time, someone anyway that had a wagon and we could throw all the stuff on. And
so this is the dead trees, the heavy stuff that you just had to get out of the way. Okay.
And we had, at that time, the Lions had a crew or fellows or guys that were used to hard work. They were farmers or whatever, some from Perryville, I know.
Was this the period we had the rodeo every year?
Yes, we did.
We had lions who could...
Who could do all that.
Do all that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, these fellows could really help. Frank and Dorothy Appleby, I always remember them, because that wasn't something you expected them to go and pick those rocks or the junk that was there, but they were there. And we always ended up with a lunch of some kind. I don't even remember that anymore. And after the first clearing off, I made some plans, sketches and plans, and brought it to Lionel and showed him, and it took a lot of imagination to think that you could do something there. When I think about it now, because it was just a disaster area.
Well, that's the part about, I'd say, this memory project, that you just don't know what happens over time.
No.
And just to have a better idea of why did this happen here and how did it happen. And so when you describe a situation that it's just a mess and you're having to clear it before you even get started. So let's pretend we park and like starting from the east end of the park, like just walking through and describing what is that, you know, like what do you see there? Because you know, right now today, I would think, first of all, someone had to put flagpoles in. There's three flagpoles, right?
Right. I believe there might have been one even that's in Athabasca. Mm. I'm not sure, but we had the flagpoles came a little while later.
Okay, because they're down at the east end, right close to the top of the bank.
Yeah, well, there was one there maybe, but but we had to clear it all to make it look like it was a park. And I think the next thing was the trees. I wanted to get trees in there.
Yeah, because you had an idea about the kinds of trees you wanted.
Yeah.
And that's a deliberate thing too, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think who worked with me then.
And where did you get the trees?
No, I got to think of his name too.
Not Wisco.
No, just down the highway.
Oh, not Peden.
No, Peden's out the lake.
Right.
South of town. Hmm. You know him well, because I do.
Can't think of who it would be.
I can. It's just so...
Yeah.
I haven't got the book with me, so I can't. But we ordered the trees or asked him about the trees there. And we went out, Hal was with me, and we tagged them, the ones we wanted. And I'm trying to think whether that was his job to dig them up, or the county had a digger at the time that could dig them out and plant them.
So Hal was working with you from the very beginning on this one. Okay, yeah.
He was there then when...
Yeah.
When we had that, and I remember asking Lois to come and give me an idea how we could plant them, or
Lois Robicon with Birch Meadow.
And I'd hoped that she had ideas how we could stagger them somehow so they weren't all in a row. I didn't want them all in a row. I wanted them to look like they just grew out of there. And they were beautiful trees. It took a lot of water. And I think the town watered them the first few times. Yeah. And the thing was that they were healthy trees. They could survive anything. And
so what about the, I don't know if I could count offhand, but the number of benches, tables, then there's a gazebo. How did that all happen? Because a lot of that work, that's William Popowich.
I'm trying to think how I got to meet him, but I did. And he priced what a table would cost and all that. But once I had an idea that that's what we could do, is set up tables, the next thing was to get people that would pay for these tables, because they were about $1,200 for the tables, and benches alone were about $1,000. And we didn't have the money to just do that all, and the town wasn't going to do that. So I guess I just got on the phone, or whenever I met somebody that I thought would like to put their name on it, or in memory of their family, and I would either phone them or talk to them and talk them into into spending the money. And whenever I got someone that would, then I would phone Willie, and he would make one for me and bring it down. And this just went on all the time. It seemed like I was always asking somebody for money, which is not my thing, but I did. And there were a lot of people who lost their family and wanted to remember them, or I can't remember. And we did that with tables and then the benches. And I had in mind what they would all look like once I in my mind, I could write it down on paper, this is how I'd like to see it. But whether it would be possible or not, I don't know. It took a lot of perseverance, it was a good thing I knew a lot of people.
And at some point you decided to have those portables put up there so people had the option if they needed to use the washroom. Yeah. There was those portables up there.
Oh yes, we realized that had to be done at the first opening or first thing we had, function that we had there. And I remember Hazel Mins was there. I think it was Hazel. And after the function, she said to me, "Rosie, this is a very good idea, but you better get a toilet up there because I got to go home." I'll never forget that she was the one that said, get a bathroom up there. So that we did. And I think, if I remember correctly, I'm not sure if the Lions paid for that, some of that, or the town chipped in,
And then Select Rental would come out and pump them out, and that's something they just donate?
They donated that, yes. Always came out and donated that.
That's always a few times a season, right? Not just once.
No, it would be two or three times, depending on how busy the year was.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of visitors there that came from all over the world. At that time, there were a lot of from Japan and all different countries, not just...
Well, we should tell in the interview, like, how we knew that for a fact is you had a way to record it, remember?
I had books, yeah. I had some guest books there.
Yeah, and then we had to sort of stop doing that because they were tossed around or disappeared or wrecked.
They were good for a few years.
Yeah.
Good. And then the last once, somebody threw it down the hill, which wasn't very good.
But always a surprise to see all the people from everywhere that would come and enjoy it.
Actually, I went through them here the other day, looked through all of them, and I thought, oh man, that was a really nice gesture.
It's rare to be up there and not see somebody and get a little idea. Maybe it's someone from local and they just come up for a quiet lunch, but you also get the ones who might travel through town enough and they're thinking, what's up there with the welcome sign on the hill? And that's where I'd run into someone, like he said, oh yeah, my dad was a lion all his life in Grand Prairie or something. And you just run into all types of people, you know?
Yeah, it was so. And then we got Stan Lyle to do the gazebo. That's what it's called, isn't it?
I guess so, yeah.
Because we needed a spot where you could cook, or if you wanted to set up a table or something. Anyway, he did a good job of it, and it was really nice to have him. So that was an addition that had to go on real soon.
And there's the actual sign of the park, which I think was a company out of...
Westlock.
Really?
Oh, you mean the big one?
The big wood one.
That's somebody from Westlock.
Okay. Is it like Three Sisters Signs or something? I forget.
I think so.
Something like that. Because that's quite a feature. That sign is kind of unique. It's set up on a... you got the brick feature and you always have the plants there. Yeah. And then, so what was the opening of the park coincides with?
That sign went up about that time, I think.
It was the celebration of Alberta's 75 years, was it? Or something?
We had a celebration then, but I thought it was just, and I know our opening of the park at the time.
Okay.
So I think that's what it was.
And it didn't end at some point, like you told our club we should have an area for the kids to play.
Right. I always had in my mind a dream that there had to be a place for the kids to slide or swing or something so that they would have a place all their own on that park too. So if I remember correctly, we had to really squeeze the treasurer at that time to give us some money for something, and And all we kept hearing is there isn't enough money, there isn't any money. But we did get books that showed us stuff. And I talked to a man that kind of looked after that. And there was prices on it and things that we really wanted, but we weren't able to get the money from the Lions Club at the time. We had a very limited amount.
And I recall that just the space wasn't huge. Like when you think about how you'd have the road on one side and then you'd end up in thin air on the bank if you went swinging too far. So
the area was not.
But for what it is, that's a nice little spot, I think.
Yeah. Good addition. I really wish we had a slide there. I still want one. It's funny. I don't like that one piece that we have there, the yellow
thing. The spinny thing.
It makes me sick to watch kids in it, never mind. But anyhow, I still have this idea that I'd like to see a swing up there.
Well, the swing's there. You mean a slide. Yeah.
But
there was... You know, what's funny is the bunch that put in the work to get it in there, one of those people was the fellow from Japan, if you remember. He was working at Alpac. So for the couple of years he lived and worked in Athabasca before returning to Japan, he just happened to be around and we got him helping with a shovel. And
that's right.
Oh, yeah. Kind of neat, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been a real, I don't know, an effort maybe, but it was something that I think I really enjoyed most of all in my lifetime working for the community. Mm. I think working with some of the Lions, I should say the Lions that helped out in that, it was just amazing. They were men that didn't mind spending a whole week coming up every day to put up that fence. I'll never forget that fence. Because to put a post in that ground, you had to, you saw these guys with their butts up in the air, digging with their hands to get the rocks out that were there. It's a rock bottom there. Mm. And how they got posts in there, I'll never know, but they did. And the other thing was, and they'd come from Perryville, there was Spears and a few others there, is that they spend the whole day digging and putting the posts in and all of that. They enjoy their lunch somehow or other. I don't remember, but I always managed to have a lunch for them. And the one thing they took the greatest pride in was that fence had to be perfectly straight. There was no deviations either way, no matter how many rocks there were in the bottom. You had to go make sure that those planks lined up straight. Mm-hmm. And even now, I regret those few places that the fence is down, but I'd love to look down there and hope those posts don't move anyway. But there were some guys there. There are about four or five of them that never gave up and worked on that fence every day.
Do you know if that's the site of where the one end of the cage for transporting people across the river? Because we found what looked like a concrete base and it seems like it must have been up there at some time. What do you think?
That's what somebody asked me about, but it didn't line up for me, it didn't. Okay. And somebody else asked about, and it didn't seem like it lined up. Hmm. But anyway, it was a work of a real dedication by a group of men that I'll never forget. It's in that book. You would see picture of the guys all lined up.
Yeah.
And doing that. But
and after building it, there was the annual caring of it. Like there's always something to do. Like Lois has been involved and you have Lois coming up to help with keeping water in the tank and everything for watering the flowers.
I felt that it needed something brighter, and so we started with flat plants, pots are those barrels.
Mm-hmm.
And Lois has been very good about taking care of that, and Hal had a tank somewhere, and he brought a tank out for water and dug a trench and put hoses down there for water. That's Hal's project.
That's Hal's work, eh?
Yeah.
So just what it is you got the water tank and gravity feed down a whole
That's
length
right.
of the park with two spots with a tap to access
That's
water
right.
to fill
yeah.
a pot and
yeah.
and go ahead and water. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Hal. Okay.
So that was his, he did a lot of work. He enjoyed that kind of work. So that was something that, and I actually appreciated it. He even invited his work, even if I didn't always agree with everything he wanted to do.
Well, it kind of is a way to go back to,
yeah.
like, just where are you from? I don't know if I ever asked about that. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in at home in my mother's house, or
yeah.
my mother's. Yeah, there were nine of us. I was the last one born. And
but here in this?
Oh, just in Forfar. In
oh, in Forfar.
Forfar district.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's still my one of the Barry boys has that now. Yeah, my whole family lives out in that area. But yeah, I was the last of the ninth, of that family. And yeah. I'm not very interesting. My my young life was not that interesting.
Well, what's your maiden name?
Barry.
It is Barry.
Barry, yeah.
And where I was talking to Anne, she would have been from Smoky Lake area. I figure she was delivered by a midwife, and that was interesting because at that time there would be a midwife who worked throughout
yeah,
the whole community
yeah.
and then I think her younger siblings were delivered in the hospital.
Yeah, well, my mother worked like a midwife in
okay.
that whole district, Jairus.
Huh.
So she don't think had any trouble figuring out how to have nine of her own by that time. So
your full name?
Yeah,
Rose.
That's all.
Rose Berry.
And by the time they came to me, they were running out of names. Yeah, so no, they didn't. And so right now, I am the last one of that whole family. I have no one to ask questions. I used to have one sister that was at PVL, and I could
yeah.
ask her things. And she had a good memory, and not like mine. And
well, when yeah. you described that, just going back to the park and how you always wished there was a slide there, and I'll remember that because you made that clear when we were right from the very start. And
right.
and I feel like if we talk about this 10 years from now, you'll remind me that you wanted a slide. And
will.
Was that something when you were growing up, like you just... how you knew you had an idea how you wanted something?
Yes.
That's the way you've been, eh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I've always had a good imagination of how things should look. I think there's a bit of artist in me that isn't with a pencil and a paper. It's with trees and flowers and stuff like that. And at one time, when I lived across the bush here, I had one of the nicest yards you could ever imagine, just by, with rocks and trees and shrubs and stuff and grass. And I just so enjoyed it. And my husband was very good about, I would find a rock somewhere and I would tag it and I wanted it. And they were always huge. And he would say, if you just wait till I get the crop in, and then I'll get you your rock. And I was always patient enough that I would get my rock. And the last rock I brought was when Carrie was, I don't know, I can't remember how old she was, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And I spotted a rock for her, and it was the size of this table, great big thing. And I really wanted that rock. But we had Newberry's were doing some brushing for us in the hay meadow, and I told him about that rock. He says, you know, I don't know if I can lift it, but if I can, show me where you want it.
And he meant lift it with some equipment.
He had a cat.
Obviously. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And it was Carrie's birthday. I can't remember which one, but she was pretty small then. And I showed him where I wanted it, and he dropped me this big rock right by her sand pile, close to her sand pile, her birthday present.
And so what do you see a rock, and this sounds like something that went on for a while, like you
yep.
wanted certain rocks to come home with you.
Yep.
Right. So
I had one that was like real sitting good.
Yeah.
Good one. And it was just the height of a good chair.
Yeah.
And I wanted that one right close to the house. And I wanted that one because we used to have a hired man that would come off the field, Roy Evans, and he would take off his...
Sorry, did you say Roy Evans?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he would take off his shoes, and he wore just like moccasin shoes, you know.
Mm.
And he would, they would be full of dirt from picking rocks or whatever he was doing. And he would shake off his boots out there, and he would sit there and come in and have lunch. And he was so kind, he was sure he took all the dust out of the shoes. But when he walked across the kitchen floor, you could see his footprints. And we would laugh about that. But we would not laugh at him, but
no.
I would clean it up after. And Carrie at that time was just a baby, and she learned to walk. That's another story, but anyhow. And I would always dress her in like little nighties that tied in the back, because she was always dirty and it's easy to wash and clean up. And she would see Roy coming, and she would take off and run and jump up in his arms. And he was always so dusty and dirty. And so it was kind of cute, because after he'd go, I would change her nightie. Wash her up. But it was just wonderful. He loved her dearly.
Well, how would that kind of arrangement work, where you guys had him hired on, and how did you know of Roy Evans in this example?
Well, he just lived on the next road back that way, in that direction, west.
Yeah.
And we knew him all his life. Yeah. He was a bachelor, and he didn't mind helping out, and he could use the money.
Yeah.
And so he'd come every spring and help put the crop, you know, help with the whatever work there was to do on the field. And so that's, I have wonderful memories of him.
So is it accurate to say that this all developed to become Keith and Justin's work now, the farming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Keith, eventually.
Yeah.
He didn't want to. He tried working they were putting in a gas lines or something, at that time, all over, and so they wanted him to help out, not to do any digging, but to run the crew.
Hmm.
And he went for. I don't know, did he work for a month maybe there? Because he didn't want to go on to university. He wanted to stay home and farm. But we really thought he should try something else. So he worked there for, I don't know, maybe a month. I'm not even sure how long. And he said, nope, that's not for me. So he came home and he wanted to farm. And stayed.
And Justin's your grandson, and he's looking after it now, eh?
He always wanted. He went to to Vermilion, went somewhere anyway, and took some courses and worked. Is it Vermilion that?
There's a few. I know about Olds, which is south.
Maybe it was Olds.
Yeah. A couple places in the province do have an agricultural kind of focus. Yeah.
That's where he went. And,
oh, yeah.
And he decided that's what he wanted to do. And he had always a different idea of what he wanted, especially when we used to do hogs.
Oh, you guys had a hog operation.
Yeah, we had a hog operation plus farming.
Yeah.
And that that was a lot of work, and the hogs had a disease one year that kind of finished us, so we quit that. And Keith wanted to go into cattle, so we went into purebred cattle. Tried that for a long time, too long. So he did that, and eventually got rid of the herd. I can't even remember anymore all that, but it was a long ways back. Man, I've lived a long time, and I've gone through a lot of things.
Well, when we were just sitting down, you had this list prepared, and you were just, you know, a page of things that we could have talked about, and we've touched on three things out of the whole list. But then I said too that an hour, your voice starts to, so we could get another visit. I was tempted to say, let's get Marge involved too. Like, to me, I always think, what can I do that also combines something I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I always looked at this as an opportunity to visit with you too.
Yeah. Now you know how. Where I come from, eh?
Well, you realize that there's so much about a person you'll never know, because there's not enough time to learn, right?
No. It's so true. I don't think about my life and my past that much, because I've got too much now to think about. I've got such a full life right now with my grandkids and my great-grandkids, but I have granddaughters that I'm just so proud of. I'm so proud of those girls. They're all heading out to get, well, one's going to get her master's pretty soon. And the other two are next year. And the one in the States who just got married.
So when you think about your granddaughters in this case, like the pride you feel, is it that you see them realizing goals that they have made that makes you proud? Like, how?
I'm proud of the people they've become, the women or the girls they've become. They're kind. If I could say first, they're kind, they're gentle, they're adaptable to anything. You know, they can take on anything, and especially Carrie's girls. And they've achieved a lot. They've achieved a lot, you know, and done a lot. And they're such nice people.
Hmm.
That I think that's what I'm most proud of.
Well, you were saying, like, you've done so many things, and you think about that, and that you don't have a lot of time to think about what's happened in the past because you're busy. And
that's right.
Do you feel a sense of pride when you look at your achievements? Do you ever think of it in that way?
A lot of pride, but I think I didn't do so bad.
You do?
I did a lot of things.
Yeah, okay.
And well, and I had a great, I had a great life. It was hard.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an easy life. And, you know, I think about now. And I tried very hard that they all either had an education or that they had something that they can go back to, you know. And Barb became a teacher, Bunny became a nurse. I'm very proud of her as a nurse. Yeah, she was a real. And Carrie's, of course, she did an amazing job of being a, you know, going away to Ontario and getting London, Ontario, and getting her degrees in music and teaching.
Can I ask, sorry, I was going to say that music in the family seems to have always been a big part.
For me, it has. Yeah. It has very much.
Yeah.
It has.
Well, the fact that that was important with your Harvest Fest, but just, it seems like it's been a thing for you guys.
Yeah, it has. So, I don't know. I said I'm very proud of my family, but I'm so very proud of my granddaughters.
Mm-hmm.
I have not that many of them, so